So thank you, John, for being involved with the Campbelltown Oral History Project and also being willing to be interviewed.
Oh, it's a pleasure for me to do it.
Okay. So just for ID purposes, this is an interview with John Lohman, recorded by Dai Booker on the 24th of November at Walkley Heights. It is part of the Campbelltown City Council Oral History Project, Our Fruitful Record, A History of Market Gardens in Campbelltown. So, John, we'll just start with a few questions about you, about your family. So what's your full name?
John Maxwell. Max is my father's name.
That's right.
Yes. Lohman.
Yeah, Lohman. Yeah. So do you pronounce that Lohman or Lohman?
Either.
Oh.
I've got a cousin. Oh, I shouldn't.
No.
I've got a cousin that won't take anything else but Lohman. So,
yeah.
But
right.
Here in the village, I'm known as both.
Right. Yeah. So what's your date of birth?
The 26th of July, 1931.
Congratulations. Yeah. And where were you born?
I was born down at St Peter's in Adelaide.
Mm.
And
at home or in a hospital?
No, hospital.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a small hospital down there.
Right. Yeah.
It's not there anymore.
Yeah.
But,
and what was the full name of your father?
John Alex Maxwell Thomas.
Oh, but he was known as Max.
Max,
mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. And when was he born, can you remember?
Did yes, he was born on the 4th of April, 1909.
Mm, good, yeah. Yes. And where was he born?
At home, I believe.
Yes, usually was, wasn't it, yes. In those days?
Mm. Of course, this has all been recorded, isn't it?
Yes.
One of his brothers, Grandpa went to work, and when he came home, the baby was in the cot.
Yeah.
Grandma had done it all.
As women did in those days.
Yes.
Yes, I'm sure that happened all the time. And what was his occupation?
He was walking down Schultz Road, and one of the Fry brothers said to him, "What are you doing? You should be at school." And Dad said, "I'm 14 today and I'm going to work." And Mr. Fry said to him, "You go down and see the boss down there and they'll give you a job."
Right. And so that's where it all
that's
started.
That's where, the day he was 14.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. But had the family had been involved with market gardens before then, had they? With your
Grandpa.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. We'll come to that. And what about your mother? What was her name?
She was Nellie Hunt.
Right.
That's her full name.
Yes, right. Yes.
And she was born in Uraidla.
Mm-hmm.
And they were on the land, I believe.
When was she born? Do you know?
She was born on the 13th of December, 1908.
Right.
Yeah, a year before that.
Yeah. And did she work before she got married, or was she in those days a lot of girls didn't work before they got married, they stayed at home and helped in the family?
She had a small job in Gawler Place in Adelaide.
Oh.
I think she was a shorthand typist or
okay.
something. Yeah.
So she used to come down from Uraidla
yes.
every day. Wow.
Yeah, it was a big thing in those days.
Yes, it would have been. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably on... Oh, I guess there was a bus of some sort, a tram maybe?
Oh, yeah.
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 She might have had several ways of getting
there. Oh, I think it was all buses, pretty well, yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you have any siblings, brothers and sisters?
I've got two sisters, had two sisters. One of them died. She was an epileptic. And the other one, she lives at McLaren Vale. And she's 12 years younger than me.
Oh, okay.
So she was a very late baby. Yeah, 12 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And the older sister, she died. She married a gardener at Carey's Gully.
Yeah, so it's in the blood.
Yeah.
Mm. So you were in the middle?
No, I was the oldest.
Oh, you were the oldest.
I was the oldest, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And John, your wife, when did you? What was her name, and when did you get married?
Her name was Margaret Joan Pedler, and we were married in 1952. My mother and father went on a holiday and met Margaret's parents, and they became very friendly. Mm-hmm. And as my mother and father always were, they always ended up playing cards somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's how I met Margaret through them.
So they were the matchmaker.
Yes.
Yes, and you mentioned before that you had a very happy marriage.
We did, We were married 49 and a half years. Mm. It would have been, last week, it would have been 64 years.
Oh, well, yes, congratulations on that, even though she's not here.
Yes.
And how many children did you have, Drew?
Jeff was the son, my son. He is now 63. 63 this year, yeah. And Jennifer, my daughter, lives at Gawler. She is 60 this year, I believe. And then my wife and I adopted Sue. She's... we adopted her at 3 weeks old. Yes, I can't tell you more than that.
So, what are your first memories of Campbelltown and Athelstan areas?
Well, my school days weren't very much. We had one teacher that taught he taught from grade five onwards.
So where did you go to school?
Athelstan.
Oh, yes.
The school is still there. Yeah. I think it's heritage listed. Mm. Grades 1, 2 and 3 and sometimes 4 were taught by one teacher. And the headmaster, he taught the upper grades, but he was a World War I gas victim. And we did not get a very good education. We learned arithmetic and spelling and things like that, but the English and the things like that were very poor.
Yes. And you mentioned when I met you before that you were thinking about going to take on an apprenticeship when you finished school.
Yes. Dad's brother-in-law worked for a company in Adelaide who built push bikes, and he got me my first job, and I only worked there 12 months. It was dirty work. It was cleaning up, welding and all that sort of thing. It was, and I left that. I was offered a job working for a plumber, and I was working there for nearly 7 months, I think it was, and he approached me one night and said he'd like me to be apprenticed. The same night, Dad was offered a garden of his own to work. And the first thing he did was ask me if I wanted to go with him, and I was 17 at the time, and... yes, it was a decision that he wouldn't have done if it hadn't been. I was always with him. I was either with him or my grandfather. Mm. My grandfather, Samuel Lomond, he was a worker. He never knew when to stop. That was the trouble.
And what did he do?
He was a gardener.
He was a gardener.
He worked for the Fry's.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Yes, he worked for the Fry's.
So when your father was offered the property, that was the first opportunity the family had to purchase?
Yes, yes.
So that was important then for him to have you alongside?
Well, it was. And he was a good gardener. He knew to know what he's talking about. Mm. Yes. Mm.
So a change of direction for you.
Well, it wasn't. I gave the regulation. I suppose it was 3 weeks notice, 2 weeks notice, or something in those days, and it was a mile to go to from where we lived on Merivale Road, Athelstan. It was more than a mile. I used to ride my bike there every morning and learn as much as I could.
So where was the land?
Do you know the gorge cutting?
Yes, yeah.
Well, on the top side of that, on the going to go through the cutting on the left-hand side towards the river.
Right. And how much land was there?
There was only 9.5 acres there. But we eventually leased quite a bit. We leased another 10 acres, or 10.5 acres actually, brought it up to 20 acres, and then there was land over by the quarry where this is.
Now, we're looking at one of the photographs from your CD that was given to you for your birthday.
Yes,
this is the cutting.
Yes. And this was, as you can see, the photograph of the quarry in the background. Mm. And we leased that. There was, I don't know, there was 30 acres there, I think, but we didn't work at all. And there was no water on it. So that is all grown without water.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yes. We'll come to the water in a minute.
Yes.
Yes. When that, you didn't buy any other land, that was...
We didn't buy any other. We had one property offered us. They wanted, because Dad had a mortgage of £2,000. He never had a mortgage in his life, not to that extent. No. But we had a property offered to us on the other side of the river for £16,000, which today would be worth $1 million.
What kind of soil was in the land?
Now, this is... the Torrens runs through from the gorge right through to the river mouth and on that, there's a lot of river flats, pure sand, beautiful soil. It's been washed down over the centuries, and it was very, very... That was on the northern side of the river. Mm-hmm. On the southern side of the river, where we lived, was all black mud, Bayabisky, which was very difficult to work. But it took very, very small amount of feed to grow stuff. It was exceptionally good. Whereas the sandy flats did tend to take more fertilisers and things to manage it.
Yeah. So probably not quite as effective in cost effective in some respects.
Oh, look, that didn't come into it really.
Really?
No, yeah. No. So, fertilisers were fairly cheap.
Yes. So I notice you've made some notes about the soil. So is there anything else you'd like to talk about in regard to the soil itself?
The soil itself, well, the Bayabisky, like I said, was very, very difficult to work. As soon as it rained, it stuck to your boots. But sandy flats, we went to an open day. When they demonstrated these big new sprinklers, and it was raining cats and dogs, and it was on a place called Beefacres, alongside of where the Paradise Darley Road bridge runs across the Torrens, and it was one of the bigger properties, and the water just soaked away. They were watering carrots, and this particular day. And it was just amazed us because we couldn't even walk on our land.
No.
And it was in the middle of the winter, and there they were watching carrots.
Oh, yes. So that does make a difference even in the gardens we have today.
Yes,
doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. But the soils that were deposited by the natural flood of the river over the many, many centuries was really beautiful stuff. Yeah. It started at the... Am I allowed to mention names?
Yes.
Yes. It started at the top end. Skinners owned the property on the northern side of the river up there, and that was a very big flat. And then on the corner is Taylor's owned that, then Larson's, and then on the other side of the river, Wicks's owned big property there, which Wicks Estate is. In fact, most of it is still not, it's on the river and it can't be built on it. It's too low. Yes. Even today, with the control of the reservoir up the top, and it would still flood at some time or other. Yes. Yeah.
So did you have many floods before the dams were built?
Before Kangaroo Creek was built, yes, we did have a few floods, and we lost onions at different times. On a little bit of flat country we did have. But I used to love the floods. It was magnificent to see them, you know. Because the Torrens, is everybody laughs about the Torrens being a river, but it really is a river.
Did you, when your father first bought the land, did he have to clear it at all?
No, it was all cleared.
It was all cleared.
Yes. That was something I've got down here. The gardeners in our area in particular, they'd have half-acre patches and a little patch of cauliflowers here and a little patch of cauliflowers there and a few onions coming on for the summer and things like that. And when we moved in, we had three horses, and we turned the whole place into one garden. We had what in the 9 acres we had basically three-acre blocks, which we used. When we got our first tractor in 1952, the little blocks of land were useless.
Yes, yes.
And by the time you drive off, you have to turn around and come back again. And they were useless. So therefore, we turned the whole place into...
Did you and your father employ other people to work?
No, we didn't. Not as regular things. But during the 1950s, 51s, 52s, there was a lot of Italians came out to Australia. And they got jobs working at Holden's and just about everywhere you could think of. And they were looking for jobs Saturday morning. And they'd come up all up the Gorge Road on Saturday mornings. We had 16 there one morning. And we used to catch up with the work that was behind, like hoeing or whatever was required. If we were cutting off onions or something like that. It was all done with hands in those days. And onion cutting was done in contract work, two shillings a box, a crate.
And so that brings us, you mentioned onions. So what other vegetables did you grow?
Well, when we started off, I've counted it several times. I think we had about 9 different things. There was carrots and parsnips and beetroot. They were the bunch. And then we grew a lot of tomatoes. And in the winter, we had your collish and your cabbage. And we used to grow a lot of red cabbage for John Wiper's pickle factory. We used to have a contract every year for that. Basically, we had... 9 or 10 different things we used to grow.
Yes.
And then as you worked, as we got, we didn't grow any bunch, like carrots, none of that, because it's too labour intensive for two people to run.
Yeah.
You had to have things that two people could run easily, you know.
So then what was really the main crop then?
The main crop then was onions, and we used to grow a lot of potatoes, collies and cabbage. Collies and cabbage in winter time, onions and tomatoes. We grew a lot of tomatoes. We had 10,000 steaks at one stage.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. We used to get quite a bit of casual labour to tie that up.
I was going to say, who tied them
yeah.
up?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that was...
So one of the things that you did mention before, that I think it was a fascinating story about how you used to be in charge of the water.
Yes. I used to... can I go back a bit further?
Yes.
When they discovered Athelstan, they learnt that the soil was good and the water was good. And the water ran all the year, from springs up at where the Corkscrew is, and just different streams that ran in it. There was always a little stream of water, not enough to. And when they built the gorge weir to supply water to the Hope Valley Reservoir, they cut off that stream of water. And they used to give us an allocation of water every week in the extreme time of the year, the hot summers. And that water used to come from past Skinner's, Taylor's, Larson's, Wicks's, and by the time it got to our place, it was water that was released at 9 o'clock in the morning. Got to our place about 5 or 6 Saturday, Friday afternoon. It was always let go Friday mornings. And we used to start the pump as soon as there was enough water to cover the pump. And then I would start watering. And I'd water around the clock until we'd have watered everything. This is how we found out and knew that by watering once a week was adequate.
Amazing.
By watering good drink, hour and a quarter, once a week was adequate to grow what we needed to grow.
So how did you actually do the watering? Was it just turning the taps for the...
Oh, look, in the early days it was running down drains. And but as we got money, we bought sprinklers. And wanted another line of sprinklers once, and Dad said, well, you better go and get one. And he said, you'll have to pay for it yourself because there's no money in the kitty. And I said, oh, anyhow, they eventually paid me for it. But I went and got what I wanted. It was fluming, aluminium piping.
Oh, yeah.
And they were in 20-foot lengths, and you shifted them one at the time.
Oh, okay. So it was pretty hard work then, shifting all
the... Oh, it wasn't the hard work. It was the mud was the problem. Yeah. You know, your rubber boots were always chock-a-block. Mm-hmm. You're lifting a kilo of mud every time you lifted your foot. Yeah. But we was on a sort of side of a hill on a slope, and we couldn't use the modern wheel-type sprinklers they use out at Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
We were not able to use them because it was too much of a slope.
Yes. Yeah.
But
you would have been rescuing the sprinklers all the time.
Yes. Yeah. Friday afternoons, I used to spend a lot of my time setting up the sprinklers for the night. As soon as the water came down, I'd run them for an hour, switch them off, and turn the next line on. And I'd generally have enough to go me. I'd just go back in the shed and set my alarm and go to sleep. generally had enough to keep me going until, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
In the morning.
4 o'clock in the morning. And then I'd start shifting and shifting all day until the watering was done.
So how many days did it take to do the watering?
Oh, look, if I started that Friday afternoon at 6:30, 7:30, whenever there was enough water there, by Sunday afternoon, it was just about all done.
And so when the water came down from the reservoir, did it just It just came down and filled up your...
Filled up our pool,
yes.
Then moved on and filled up the next one. It got down as far as the Paradise Bridge.
Okay.
Well, that's where we believed it got to, because we had people down there that a big property alongside the bridge, the Paradise Bridge. Yeah. Their name was Shorts. And they used to grow citrus and fruit trees and things, So the water got down to the Paradise Bridge as far as we knew,
So that went on every weekend in summer?
In the summer, yes. It was my auntie's, my father's sister, her husband worked for the waterworks. And he lived in a little waterworks cottage just as you go into the gorge. He lived in that cottage, and he used to control the water from the... And part of his job was to walk up all the gullies looking for dead sheep and cattle and anything that shouldn't be in the water course. That was one of his jobs. And he also released the water on Friday afternoons.
Very important job. Yes. Did you have any other things that you wanted to talk about the water?
About the water? Mm. No, I was... the gorge weir was built specifically to fill the Hope Valley Reservoir. And when... Actually, the first reservoir was Thorndon Park.
That's right.
And they could fill Thorndon Park from the Hope Valley Reservoir. There was a pipeline joining the two. And that was the... they used to have an open aqueduct.
Yes.
They don't have that anymore. They just recently, in the last 5 or 6 years, they put down a pipeline all the way down. But Thorndon Park is finished. They don't have any water there. And there's one thing that should have been heritage listed, and it's too late now, it's gone. But on the bottom side of the Thorndon Park Reservoir was a horse trough. It was 7 or 8 feet long. And, you know, Athelstan's 10 mile from the city. I think from the GPA to the Athelstan post office was just on 10 mile, I think it was, in those days. Could still be the same. And that water trough was vital because by the time the horses got home from there, they wanted a drink. And so did I when I used to go to school. Yes.
So I wonder where it is. Somebody's garden, perhaps.
Beg your pardon?
I wonder where it is. Is it in
Oh, the... no. It would just be destroyed.
So you've mentioned some of the other families, and I was interested that you also mentioned that you grew tomatoes, because we always think today, these days, that tomatoes grow in glasshouses.
Yes.
So did you use...
We used to grow a lot of tomatoes.
Yeah, did you use glasshouses?
No, it was all open.
Open.
Yes, yes. Mm. We had our little packing shed where we used to come in and tomatoes would be all graded, hand graded. My mother used to do a lot of it, and she used to do what they used to call row and grade. That means put them in rows and grade them. And we used to sell a lot on the old GAN. They used to go to Alice Springs, and then they used to load the trucks and they'd go to Darwin. And we had a regular trade with all our tomatoes. And they were picked very, very green. Picked green, and they used to ripen on the way, and they'd be almost ready to eat when they got there. Because in those days, I think it was about 4 days to get to Darwin.
Yes.
By the time they offloaded in Alice Springs.
And so most of your vegetables then would have gone into... East End Market originally?
Yes, all of them.
So did you have to take responsibility for early in the morning?
We started gardening in 1947, and in 1950, I'm not accurate on these dates or anything, but in 1953 we were marketing potatoes and onions. And Dad came home from market one day and called in to the doctors because he had a pain. And he came home and he said, and there was a load, half loaded for Monday's market. This was on a Friday. And he said, the doctor's going to operate on me this afternoon. He said, I'm badly ruptured. So you'll have to go to market. And I didn't know anybody. I knew where our stand was. That's all I knew. And that's how I started going to market. I was very nervous. Mm-hmm. I could drive. I had a driver's license and everything, and I could drive, but I'd never driven that far before. And not in the truck. Mm-hmm. And when I got in the market, Dad had made arrangements. He'd rang up three or four greengrocers, mm-hmm. and there they were.
Oh, wonderful. Yes.
Yeah. They helped me, they guided me, they introduced Dad's customers to me, and they actually, on the next market day, which is the coming Friday, I was looking forward to going to market.
Yes. That's wonderful, isn't it?
That so I got thrown in at the deep end.
Yes. Mm. But obviously with a wonderful guardian angel of your father looking after
you. Well, it's all he could do. He rang up because I didn't have a phone or anything. And Dad and Mum had a phone, and it was years before I ever got a phone. And then when I started going to market, well, you had to have a phone for night orders and things like that.
So talking about your father then, I believe he was quite inventive and really a bit of a scientist or an agronomist.
He was, as far as mechanically, he didn't know how to put two screws together. Mm. But gardening, he was brilliant. Mm. He really was. Mm. And he had a cauliflower given to him. His brother gave it to him, a seed of a cauliflower, and his brother said, look, he said, it's getting fairly old. Growing seed where there's other things like cabbages or cauliflowers in flower was very dangerous. The seed you grew could turn out to be like broccoli or anything but a cauliflower. Yeah. And he told Dad this. He said, look, he said, this seed, it'd be lovely if you could improve it. And Dad said, oh, righto, here goes. So he planted the first seed bed and he took, I believe it was about 20 plants up to Manham. He had a friend up there, Ken Mercer, his name was. He was a greengrocer. And he planted these cauliflowers, and as they grew, Dad would go up every 5 or 6 weeks and see how they were going, and he'd pull out some that were not much good, he reckoned. Mm-hmm. And he'd end up with perhaps 10.
Yeah.
And he'd sow that seed. We'd come home and he'd grow that seed, and from that seed he'd take 20 more. Mm-hmm. And he did that for 3 years. And it was grown up at the river where there was no cross-pollinisation or anything like that, and it became famous. In fact, in Europe today, I don't know about today, I'm going back 20 years ago now, it is known as Y66. It's a code name. Yeah. And the same cauliflower got overseas.
That was... lovely story.
Yeah. Yes. I can tell you little stories about that too. I had a man came here. Do you remember when they changed all the electricity bulbs?
Yes.
The government subsidised it all or paid for it all or something. A man came here one day and he changed my 22 globes over to the new modern ones and the cheaper ones to run and all the rest of it. And he said, what's your name here? And I told him, he was filling out the form. He said, Lom. And he said, I knew a Max Lyman. I said, no, that was my father. He said, oh, he said, he grew a cauliflower that we knew a lot about. He said it was really good. So I felt like $1 million.
Yes. That's amazing, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah.
Someone who just comes to the house knows about.
Yes, yeah. knew about yeah. my dad. Mm, yes.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
So what else have you got on your list, John?
On my list? Yeah. Well, I've got things like, we've done the water and the land and I've got things like the institutions in Athelstan, like, it was, of course, looking at it from a very young point of view, it was, everybody seemed to be friendly and happy with everything. You never heard of any rows or fights or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And, the churches meant a lot. There was two churches in Athelstan. Yeah. They meant a lot. They used to, the top end church, which is the Gorge Church, they called it. They had their congregation, and we had our congregation down at just quite close to where the Athelstan Shopping Centre is today. Yeah. That's where it used to be. Yeah. And came. Middle of January, early February, we'd have a picnic. And the two churches used to combine. Mm-hmm. And they used to load the trucks up, trucks with boards across for everybody to sit in the back of a truck. You couldn't see them going in the road like that today.
No.
20 people or more sitting in the back of the truck. And we'd go down to Brighton or Henley Beach or Glenelg. And we'd spend the day down there having a picnic. So the community was fairly, from my eyes, yeah. was very combined mm-hmm. and
close, I guess.
Close.
You could say,
yes. That was the word I was meaning in the first, thinking yes, of the first yeah. place. Yeah. And then there was the school. The school was, we only had the one grading there. We only went to grade 7. Mm-hmm. And because everybody went to that school in those days. And that was a big thing. You know, they'd have a school fights and the women used to do the usual things, the running things, you know. And
so there were fairs and fates and things like
yes.
that.
Yes. And then there was the Institute, which, you know, I don't know how often the dancers were, but I learnt to dance there, such as my dancing was. But...
And did they have other? Did they ever show films and pictures at the
no,
Institute? No, they did down at McGill, but perhaps the Athelstone might have been a bit smaller.
Oh, look, well, wasn't the population that would have been around McGill. Mm. No. Mm.
So it was mainly the
dancing. Mm. And I think they used to have indoor bowls there, mm-hmm. But I didn't know about it. And there was a library there, which yes. was opened every Friday night or something, I'm not just sure. Yeah. But my father, he was the caretaker there for several years, quite a few years, in my early days. Yeah, and then there's the football club. Well, there's the Athelstan Football Club, there's the Campbelltown, Glenroy Oval.
Did you play football?
No, I didn't. Never played anything.
You were too busy in the
game. Yeah, and we used to play... Hope Valley was, they were very, very, the two teams were very opposed to each other, you know. And then getting onto the tennis, we were fairly strong with tennis. My father had several cups and things. And we used to play against Paracombe, Campbelltown's church, mm-hmm. and Titigalli. Mm-hmm. It was a circuit,
yes,
and they used to play yes. tennis.
So was there a cup at the end of it, or a trophy of some sort?
Oh, I'm not sure. I didn't know. No.
Max's collies.
No. No, it was... I didn't know a great deal about it because I wasn't encouraged to play tennis or anything. And I really wasn't interested. I had a rifle when I was 12 years old, and Dad taught me the security and the safety and everything. It seems young today to have had a rifle, but I'd often bring home a couple of rabbits.
And so I was going to say, did you have many rabbits and things in the garden?
No, not in the garden. No. In the hills, around the the hills and that. Getting back to the water, can we go back?
Yes.
Apart from the river, there was a lot of bores. And I know quite a few of where the good bores were in some of the waters. Not, but there was one on the other side of the river from Paradise Bridge there. The water was that, it used to run up over the top of the pump automatically. There was a spring in it, and it used to come up over the top.
And it was good water?
It was good water, yes. And one of the best waters was at the base of the Sugarloaf. Do you know the Sugarloaf? There was one there. Jack Hutchinson put that down, and it wasn't very deep. There's houses over the top of it now. And that supply, he had a big garden, and that supplied the garden there.
Yeah. Very important, aren't they, the bores?
Yes, and that was another source of water. Yes, I thought I'd mention that. And then there's the, I don't think there's a great deal more I can tell you about the people of Athelstan. My grandmother, she used to go to the abattoirs once a month. You know, the horse and buggy, or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
And she'd go round to the different growers, and they'd have, it might have a little pig or two, little piglets they didn't want or something.
Yeah.
And she'd take them out the abattoirs, and she had a little business. And,
Yeah.
I think she used to get about 2 shillings an animal for taking them over there or something like that. But there wasn't, the money was not like it is today.
No. What were some of the real challenges that you had in the garden? You know, obviously keeping up the water in summertime and making sure that, you know,
that was part of the mission.
I mean, weather is really something that's, you know, you can't control.
You can't control that. Mum and Dad would go down the garden Sunday afternoon, just go for a wander down the garden. And Dad would be looking around and he'd see something and he'd tell me next, on the Monday morning, he'd say, there, take a bucket of sulphate of ammonia and do that little patch on the corner there, it's starting to look a bit yellow. Little things he noticed about tomatoes and things that I wouldn't have.
No.
I learnt from it, but I wouldn't have never have known myself. No.
He obviously had a real eye for it.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Something that was innate. He was just new. Yes.
1952 or 53, we bought our first Ferguson tractor. And this was when we started making the patches bigger, turning 3 small patches into 1 big one and things like that. We had 2 tractors eventually. Dad wasn't a tractor driver.
He preferred the horses.
Yeah.
Steadier and easier to control, perhaps.
Yes. I worked in the gardens at the Fry's when I was 8. Saturday mornings, they'd, you know, to lead horses through cauliflowers and tomatoes and beans. You had a man led the horse through, but led the bridle through. And Ray Fry, he owned the biggest garden down there. He asked Dad if I'd lead the horse. Dad said he's not tall enough to lead the horse. He said, but he can lead him off the top. So they used to jack me up and put me on the back of the horse, and I'd steer the horse through the whatever it was we were doing, scarifying or moulding up or whatever we were doing. And I was 8 years old.
My goodness.
Yeah. Eventually, I got taller and I could reach the horse's bit and I'd lead the horse through the... But when I was small, I couldn't.
8 year olds and not usually very tall, aren't they? No. So when did you finish up? When did you retire from the gardens?
Dad had a heart attack and I think it was connected to Mum's. Mum died in just before Christmas in 1970. And Dad was never the same.
No.
And within 6 months of that time, or 9 months of that time, he'd had this heart attack and he couldn't do anything very much. And I got offered a job. And I just walked out the garden. The government bought it all. We were told it was going to be golf courses and recreation areas and all this sort of thing. And people were getting, they were getting more, almost double for a block of land than what we got for an acre. It was totally unfair. In fact, there was a big meeting about, this can be cut out if you need to. There was a big meeting about it in the Institute and all the gardeners were all along the river. They protested, but the government, they didn't listen to us.
No. The name of progress, I guess it was. I guess that, you know, one of the questions I was going to say was about the changes that you've noticed in the way the land's been used, but you've really answered that with your comments about the sale of the land. And, you know, the population of Adelaide has increased so much.
Yes,
and, I mean, this is a wonderful area close to the city, and I guess it is a shame that it isn't more open space.
Yes. Well, see, the tram used to come out to Paradise.
Yes, yeah.
And see, that was only less than 3 miles from where we lived. In fact, I walked it quite a few times.
Yes.
11 o'clock at night, Saturday nights sometimes.
Yeah. As you did in those days.
Yes, we'd go to the pitches in the city and, catch a tram and perhaps you push bike or walked it.
As long as you didn't miss the last tram.
That's right.
So is there anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, I don't think. I just made a few notes that I thought might help us. It's grown now. People would never realise what happened in the early days.
No, well, that's one of the reasons why we wanted to speak to people.
Like I remember when I was a kid, I don't know what I counted, 26 houses or something. And that wasn't all around the shopping centre either. It was quite a way out, you know. During the war, we lived in Merivale Road. And right opposite, diagonally opposite our corner was a military camp. And that area from there back to Montacute Road was, I believe there was Colonel Fox leased it. I don't know, it was on a 100-year lease or what it was, 99-year lease, whatever they call it. And until, up until that stage, 1944-45, it was practically undeveloped. And then Higginbottom moved in, and gradually the township grew. I remember a lot of it, although I moved out of Merivale Road when I was 17. And you'd go down the road and you'd see a new house going up here or something. Right opposite the Institute is a vacant block. That was my grandfather's.
Oh.
It's still vacant today. Never been built on. So he always had strawberries or something growing. All the year round he used to grow onions and little patches of stuff, but it was in his blood.
Came down into your father's blood as well.
Yes.
John, you mentioned that when you finished work, though, that you actually did go and work in the East End market for a while.
Yeah, I worked for the Banana Agency for 19 and a half years. My wife was, she had leukemia, and the boss came to me one day and he said, "We want you to finish up. Go home and look after your wife." And his final sentence was, "And when it's all over, come back." So I thought that was a good record.
Yes. That's a very good reference, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes. Yes. I never went back because Marg lived for another 6 years.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. Be pretty hard work too. As you get older, hard work too.
Yeah.
Humping the boxes around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, John, for contributing to the Market Garden project. And, you know, it's been fascinating talking to you. And I hope that when we come to do the final exhibition, that you'll be able to come along and be a star of the...
I wonder about a star, but I'm just... I really am pleased that I've had the opportunity. My father's sister said to me once, "We have that much knowledge between us." Mm. This is when there was nobody left. Mm. "We should write a book." Mm. We didn't.
No. Well, maybe this is the first part of it.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So thank you, John. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the opportunity. Yeah.
Well, that was very good.
They might cut a lot of what I said out, but...